I'd like to call to order this regular meeting of the Madison Plains Board of Education. Roll call, please.
Mr. Mason?
Here.
Mrs. Anikas?
Here.
Mr. Butts?
Here.
Mrs. Foley?
Here.
Mr. Coburn?
Here.
Mr. Eisler and I are also here.
Please stand for the Pledge of Allegiance. I pledge allegiance
to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
All right, so now we'll turn to public communication. We have Becky Garrett.
Hi. It's been many years since I've addressed this school board. At one time, it was my voice that changed a corrupt school board and administration. A wave of community support joined me at these board meetings and filled the gymnasium across the district with month-long before social media was ever a tool. Eventually, in a local, state, and nationally recognized landmark court battle, we won and got rid of the bad school board, and thus cleaned up my dearly loved Madison Plains School. I've been a part of this school all but 4 years of my life, and I'm very proud of it. This time, my focus pertains to a happier matter. So let me introduce myself. My name is Becky Garrett. My husband Rex and I have been together for nearly 40 years. We built our home on 4940 Old Springfield Road specifically to provide our children with a Madison Plains education. We raised three boys proudly through this district. At home, they were sternly raised to be independent, strong-minded and opinionated, hardworking and determined, loyal, honest, and trustworthy, much like most good parents do. However, mine were taught a little extra. They were taught to dare to not only dream big, but act upon it without fear. They were taught to be kings among the strong. They were taught to be heroes among the weak. All three of my boys have grown into amazing men. Brian, our oldest, is your maintenance and custodial coordinator. He has a passion for the school equal, if not greater than mine. His wife is one of your teachers. Our youngest son, Nathan, is finishing up his exercise science degree and is considering helping out at coaching cross country and track in his spare time here. But it is my middle son, Aaron, that brings me to this podium tonight. Aaron is a 2007 Madison Plains graduate who has become a SAG actor living in LA. He has had roles in the movies Super 8 and Foxcatcher. He wrote, acted, directed, produced a short film called Dead Comes Due that appeared at the Cannes Film Festival. In June of 2016, he came back home to London, Ohio to film his full-length SAG movie. He wrote, acted, and directed it under the working name Madison, using area actors, local extras, and businesses. It is now known as False Flag. This Saturday, September 1st, he is hosting a free event called London's Entertainment Black Party, first of its kind. From 4 to 7 p.m. on Main Street, they're shutting Main Street down, between the streets of 1st and 2nd, right in front of the State Theater. Vendors, food, music, photo ops, army vehicles, raffles, local entertainers, movie merchandise, prop purchases will be available at this festival. Everyone is welcome to come and experience a historical, first ever landmark event for London and Madison County. And I would like to think that Madison Plains is proud of my son as well. Following the event is the red carpet premiere of his movie False Flag at the State Theater. Tickets will be required to view the movie at that time. I'm here asking this board and superintendent to acknowledge such an outstanding achievement for my son and a Madison Plains graduate by reading this opening remarks and announcements prior to London and Madison Plains football game Friday night. That's all I got.
That's nice. Thank you.
Thank you.
And
Becky, we are very proud. All of our alumni that do good things, we're very excited, and we're glad the things your son's doing. And hopefully the Madison Plains community will support him this Saturday.
Thank you.
It's the only name we have right now. So next we'll move to board work session. First item is the OSBA Capital Conference. Chad, you want to touch on that?
I will. I'll be happy to. Mr. Mason, the OSBA Capital Conference will be at in Columbus at the Convention Center on November 11th, 12th, and 13th. That is a Saturday, a Sunday, a Monday, and a Tuesday. And looking at the program, it appears that programming begins on Sunday afternoon at 1 o'clock p.m. And I am aware that Mr. Coburn, Mrs. Cooley, and yourself are planning to attend. I don't know if anybody else would like to attend, but that is an option for you if you would like. I believe you do need to sign up beginning tomorrow. We need to make registration, so if anyone else is interested in attending, now would be the time to let us know.
And I think I told you, Todd, that tolls pays for me to attend. So.
And I don't register either, correct?
Correct, yeah, I work it through them.
Do we have to go for all 3 days?
No. It's 3 days worth of sessions. You can attend one, two, or all 3 days, but at one price for whatever you choose.
Okay. I would like to attend Sunday. On Sunday.
All right, so next is Facebook live streaming of board meetings.
Mr. Mason, I am aware of the fact that there is a desire among the board, at least it's been discussed, about possibly streaming our board meetings live on Facebook. That is an attempt, of course, to be communicative and transparent. So I don't know if anyone would like to converse about that at all at this time.
I suggested putting this on there. I think we had a good experience with the budget reduction plan and the levy process. A number of the impact meetings were Facebook Live. We got a number of questions that came through live while that was going on. Had a few people just mention that'd be good to continue to do with the board meetings. I'm personally in favor of it. I wanted to open up to our discussion to see if anybody has any concerns or thoughts on it. But
nope.
No, I'm certainly in favor of it.
That's a good idea.
I just wouldn't be able to answer questions, right? Wouldn't be able to address any questions either, but, right, so not be able to comment, I suppose, but, right?
Sure, right. Yeah, it wouldn't be that kind of interactive like it was.
That would be the only difference between that and the other meetings we've had for impact and the levy meetings. We wouldn't be interacting as much from outside of the room.
Yeah, I think the value, though, is our people that can't make it here, that they can watch it live from wherever they're at.
They want us to
go out
the bad weather when we come out in
December. Right. All right, so unless there's any issues there, moving forward, we'll work towards having those on Facebook Live. A couple things that are on the board work session, but I was hoping to add. September 17th at 5:30 is the tentative date for the District Facilities and Grounds Committee meeting. I know that works for Kelly, it works for me. I'd like for you guys to attend and to invite Brian to attend as well.
I have an award ceremony to be at that evening at 7, is my opinion. So 5:30 and then be fine.
Okay.
Or as long as I can get out at
6:30. Just leave whatever. Yeah, we need to leave.
Corey, you referenced the policy committee.
Yeah, yes. We have not had, Tool and I serve on that committee. We've not actually met since February of this year, which nothing was enacted on those policies. I think it just kind of died off in the transition. So I'd like to see a set of time for that. I think everyone was on that email from OSBA today of new policies and so forth that are out there, new house bills, and so there's a slew of things that I think we need to review and we need to get proactive on that.
Yeah.
I'll work set a day.
Okay.
I'll reach out.
Thank you.
Sure. I also wanted to reference, I don't know if many people have been tracking, but I've been sitting in the audience for the last couple board meetings as I'm working, getting permission to be an activated National Guardsman in the Ohio Air National Guard and serve on the school board. It's a a slow process. They did give me permission to participate in the meetings again, but they've asked that I continue to abstain from voting. So all the votes that come up tonight, I'm going to abstain, so that's the reasoning behind that. I'm hopeful that it'll be resolved soon, but it's just kind of a convoluted process. So, all right. Anything else for board work session?
We did schedule our communications meeting for
September 4th at 5 o'clock.
Yeah, September 4th.
And I may be a little late.
Okay. Are we? Okay. If there's anything that we need to bring or prepare in advance, let us know.
I don't anticipate anything at this time.
Okay. So. Right.
Jeff, would you like to discuss the tour of the facilities? I know we discussed potentially doing that before the next meeting. One concern is if all of us are together and we're talking about school business, that's a meeting, right? So I don't know if you had any thoughts of other ways to do it. I had mentioned to you maybe two of us do it at the facilities and grounds meeting, and then another meeting with two others, and then one, whatever, however we have to split that out to make it.
I would suggest we just half an hour early, and then we can
call
the
meeting,
board meeting,
call
and
meeting
then
to order.
Do the board
session.
I mean, yeah, obviously anybody that would attend would be welcome to attend with us. We just have to advertise the earlier start time.
And the other challenge with that is that today we had scheduled as well for the photographer to come and take an updated picture of all of us for the September meeting at 6:30. So we could do the tour at 6 o'clock if you wanted, or if you want. Another thing that has been suggested as well is that perhaps when you guys come in for your committee meetings, maybe we could do a buildings and grounds tour at that point in time. So Bob and Kelly, I could get you guys on the communications committee night. We could do the facilities and grounds night, and then if we do a policy committee meeting, Corey and Tula, we could do it then as well.
Yeah,
so
it's fine.
I think that might be the cleanest place.
Yeah, that would work. But pictures never take a half an hour, so right. Don't forget her flash. Yes.
Remind her that.
If she forgets her flash, and we have half an hour.
So 6:30, next meeting?
Yes.
I would just suggest you start and end the meeting from this room. That way we can advertise the location. That way anybody who wants to go on the tour with the board at 6:30 meets here.
Well, if we're doing it, though, by the committee.
For the committee.
Right, but she had said starting the meeting at 6:30.
With pictures.
That's
right?
Just for the pictures.
Just for pictures.
Okay.
I'm sorry. I might have said.
So the tour is going to take place
with the committee.
With the committee meetings, which if somebody's there, they're open meetings, they're welcome to go with us, but it's not an official meeting. All right. So now on to approval of board minutes.
One last thing with regards to the board. Just want to thank Kelly for her donation of the bowls for our ice cream social. I know it's on social media. I think we passed out close to 500 bowls of ice cream at Carpal Tunnel for the following week due to scooping ice cream for hours and hours. But I think the parents and the students really enjoyed that. And I would like to see that something that's continued at the start of the school year. And I'd like to be able to incorporate the high school. Apologize to Michelle. She kind of got left out at that end of the campus, and hoped that people were coming down to K-6. But if there's some way that we can get creative and make that a tradition and something that we can continue to do, I think people really appreciate that.
And we have it later in the donation portions, but I think it's a good time as any to thank the people from Velvet. All that ice cream, 5-gallon, whatever it was.
32 gallons, yeah.
Yeah, of free ice cream from Velvet, the good stuff. That was very appreciated. And hopefully that can become a tradition. So.
Yeah,
that's
nice.
Very great. All that stuff is donated to the stuff. All right. So now we'll move to approval of board minutes. First is the minutes of the July 9th, 2018 meeting, July 17th, 2018 meeting, and July 24th, 2018.
Second.
Mr. President, I make a motion that the minutes of July 9th, 2018, July 17th, 2018, July 24th, 2018 meetings be approved as written.
Second.
Discussion. Roll call, please.
Mrs. Hoy?
Yes.
Mr. Coburn?
Yes.
Mrs. Aninkas?
Yes.
Mr. Potts?
Yes.
Mr. Mason?
Abstain.
Motion carries 4-0.
There's no student recognition tonight. Next, we'll move to department reports. First is the curriculum department.
From our curriculum department tonight, we have Mrs. Grigsby here, and she is going to present to us about our gifted program.
Good evening. I was asked to report out on our gifted program. It's been a couple of years since we've reported on this, and I know we've had a couple of new board members. So to just kind of give you a brief overview of what our gifted program here is, I want to start by explaining to you about the timeline that we have been on the past several years, or 3 years previous to this year. We started a pilot program in the school year of 2015-2016. Prior to that, Madison Plains had not been serving any of our students who were identified as gifted. And it had been a very long time since they had done that. I'm going to talk to you a little bit about what some of the needs were as to why we addressed that. But that's where the program started. And we started with volunteer teachers only. It was early, we called them early adopters. And what we found that year is that all of our teachers wanted to participate. We thought we were just going to start with 5 or 6 teachers, but our teachers really felt moved to address the needs of that population, recognizing that we hadn't addressed them in a long time, and took on extra responsibilities, extra professional development, so that they could learn more about the population and how to serve them. So in the school year of 2016-2017, we actually began serving all of our identified students in grades 3 through 12. And I said all because all encompassed everybody that we could serve. There were several kids, students that year at the high school especially, with scheduling conflicts or other interests and things, so not all of that population was served. But as many as we possibly could. We did, however, not serve in science and social studies in the early grades, in grades 3, 4, and 5. But we served in math and ELA during that time. And we had a real focus on professional development during the 2016-2017 school year, as far as teaching our teachers about the needs of gifted students and characteristics of gifted students, so that they could become more familiar with that population and the special needs that they have. And we increased our efforts to identify students who were gifted. Prior to that, we were following the state law's bare minimum standards for identification. We would identify only at the end of second grade and never again, unless by a referral of some type. So we increased our efforts to identify students by adding in identification at the sixth grade level as well, where we screen all students in both second and sixth grade now for possible giftedness. We also started through our professional development a lot of discussion about the habits of mind, and teaching our teachers about the habits of mind and how they, and actually teaching our students about the habits of mind, so that they could better address some of their own needs as far as organizational skills, as far as challenges, being willing to be challenged, those types of things. So last school year saw a great increase in the expectations from the State Department in regards to student performance with gifted of that gifted population, and as far as teacher credentials. Who could serve gifted students. State guidelines were set out about the teaching credentials and how many hours of specific professional development those teachers had to have. And we also started our services for any identifying and serving students in the visual and performing arts. This school year, we will continue to look and look for our students who are gifted through the referral process and through the other screeners that we have in second and sixth grade. And we, prior to this year, we've been writing goals for these students in their written education plans that were more cluster goals. So within a class, this might be the goal that class is all working towards. And so this year, we're working towards not just having that goal of the class, but more individualized goals for many of our students, especially those students who are gifted and are underachieving. And I will say, in order for us to have this program, I went back to school during the 2015-2016 school year and earned my gifted credentials. And I'll thank you, because part of that was paid by the Board of by our school district. Not all of it by any means. I went out myself and pursued a grant that paid a third of my classes. I personally paid a third, and then the district paid a third, the way that worked out. So, and that allowed us to even have the program to begin with. So, who is considered gifted? Just so that you know that, according to state law, a child shall be identified as gifted if they are two standard deviations above the mean in cognitive ability, or if they're 95th percentile in specific areas such as math, English language arts, science, or social studies. Ohio has a law that once a student is identified, they are always identified. A person doesn't become ungifted. So a lot of times what happens is maybe a student, their scores qualify them in second grade, and then we see that drop, that decline in achievement over the years. Ohio says you can't stop serving that child, or you can't stop recognizing that child is gifted. And so we continue to serve those students as well. And gifted simply means students who perform or show potential for performing at remarkably high levels of accomplishment, okay? And that's a big key, is not just performing at high levels, but show potential for performing at high levels compared to students of their same age, their experience, or within their environment. So how do we identify these students at Madison Plains? Well, I just spoke to that. We do full grade testing in second grade, the end of second grade and the end of sixth grade, in the areas of superior cognitive ability, which is high IQ students, math and English language arts, and then also creative thinking. And creative thinking is one that we just added in the last couple of years also, when we were adding in the visual and performing arts. We also do it through referrals. The state says that we have to have two windows where we take referrals, but we operate under an open referral process all year long. So if a parent, a teacher, or another student refers someone for identification, we conduct those assessments at any time that we get those. All of those that are listed above we look at, in addition to science and social studies, visual and performing arts as well. And then we do screening through the ACT program for our high school students, actually starting in eighth grade, because our students do take the ACT Aspire in the eighth grade also. Obviously, we don't use those tests for the purposes of gifted identification, but because they qualify also as identification for gifted, I do review those scores every time they come in to see if there are potential students that may qualify as well. We do provide, one of our coaches, Ms. Christina Finney, is also a gifted intervention specialist. She has gifted licensure as well. And so we use her, not just her coaching that she does in the high school, but then we have her coach across all the district in our gifted classrooms, our classes that have students who are gifted. And in those classrooms, the focus is on cognitive and collaborative classrooms, a focus on differentiation. Of course, all of our classes have a focus on differentiation, but these classes, differentiation might look different than they do in some of our others. A focus on the depth and rigor of what we're teaching, and also curriculum compacting. And that's that idea that we don't have to teach everything within like the sixth grade curriculum. We can see how much of that they already know so that we can go deeper into other areas and compact that curriculum. And it does not leave other learners out. One of the things that we're really big on saying, and our teachers know, is everything that we teach them about what's good for gifted students is good for everyone. And so our teachers are really picking up on these practices through the gifted program and implementing them in their other classes as well that they're teaching. So we serve primarily through gifted clusters with instructional support, instructional coaching from our gifted intervention specialist, Mrs. Christina Finney. We also serve students through AP courses at the high school and CCP courses at the high school. We have one teacher in our district right now, Mrs. Briggs, Toby Briggs. She has a gifted endorsement, so she is able to serve students through the civics program without the aid of an instructional coach, although she does work with Mrs. Finney all the time anyway. And then we also have another teacher, actually one of our newest hires, is finishing her gifted endorsement this fall, Therese Schroeder, and so she will be able to serve fifth grade students without that additional support as well. Also, the state is allowing us to have teachers serve gifted students now without the gifted endorsement as long as they earn 60 hours of professional development over 4 years. So every year they have to get a minimum of 15 hours and 60 by the end of 4 years. The good news about that is that our expectations for how much professional development they were giving was higher than that. So most of our teachers, even though we just started counting those hours last school year, are at 40 or 50 hours already. So we have a lot of teachers who are gonna be able to serve without even, you know, with that designation. So, and a lot of the professional development they have been getting has been one-on-one coaching in addition to workshops that we've done, sending them to other PD. Several of our teachers have just voluntarily gone to workshops and things over the summer to gain hours. And we also invested in an online professional development portal last March. It's called GT Ignite, where it has like 200 different courses that teachers can sign up for and gifted, and they can individualize to their classrooms, which ones work best for their students or the content they're teaching. And so our teachers are getting that in a variety of ways. And then also supporting our gifted students with any behavioral issues. And behavioral can mean simply organizational, executive skills, or other behavioral issues, because it is actually not uncommon at all for these students to have a lot of other issues separate from being gifted. So why did we start the program in the first place? Well, like I said before, the gifted program was non-existent. We followed bare minimum state requirements as far as screening students in the second grade, and we followed a policy of identify but not serve. In other words, we were required to identify, but we weren't required to serve, and so we weren't doing it. So putting, you know, our ideas together and looking at all the different models that we could deliver gifted instruction didn't mean having to hire an additional person, as sometimes people think it does mean. It was the investment in the teachers we already have and their professional development in ways that we could serve these students. And all the surrounding districts around us were serving gifted students, and they were not. At the time, we had over 100 identified students, and we maintain those numbers now. 100 that were not being served, and consequently, most of them were underachieving. And by underachieving, I don't mean that they were achieving below everybody else in their class, but they were achieving far below what their potential was. And what I started to investigate as I started dealing with the gifted program program and looking at all the students that had been identified over the years was I discovered it was a declining enrollment in our population, that many of these students who had been identified in elementary school by junior high and high school were either moving out of our district or open enrolling elsewhere. And so feeling like if we were better serving the needs of those students, that we could maintain that population within our district. And then of course also, there are now higher and higher expectations with the state report card in regards to service of gifted students. One thing I always like to point out to people, this slide right here is just a slide about IQ score, but it can be said to any area of giftedness, is when you look at it on this bell curve, what you can see here is the middle, the average IQ, average students are right there in that middle part of the bell curve, and 95% of the population is in that area. Students who are gifted are down here in this 2% or less of the population. And then on the other end are some of our students who are part of our special education programs. And the importance of this slide is to understand that the students who are gifted, those high IQ students, are just as far away from being average as the students who have cognitive disabilities. And so by not serving, we invest a lot into special education, and we were investing none into gifted education, yet these students' needs were just as far away from what average was as our special education population. A lot of times we also talk to, and this is one of the things we began talking to our teachers about, was the differences between high achievers and gifted students. Because a lot of people, believe if you have the highest test score, the highest state achievement scores, that you must, those are your gifted students. And a lot of our gifted students are performing maybe above average or average, but it's not their performance on a state test, it's not their grades, that is what makes them gifted. There's a difference between a high achiever and a gifted student. High achievers are often good memorizers, where a gifted student is more likely to be a good informed guesser, right? So they have some background that they're putting to it. High achievers love to memorize. Gifted students love to think and ponder. High achievers are often those rule followers, right? What do I need to do? I will follow the rules. Gifted students want only, just give me the basic guidelines and I'll get there myself. High achievers are often the hard-working students, and we, it's great when you have a class full of high achievers because they're all working hard. They all love to follow the rules, and that's not necessarily the case with a student who is just gifted. They play around most, they can play around quite a bit and still test well. A high achiever is often part of that top group of students. Gifted students are beyond that group. And so sometimes they're just as left out of those high kids as kids who are not. A high achiever takes 6 to 8 repetitions for mastery to learn something, where a gifted student only needs to do it once or twice. I credit Ms. Apala at the high school, who's a Spanish teacher. One thing I learned about her last year was that not all students have the same expectations for homework. Those students who can get it from hearing it once in class don't have the same expectations for homework as those who need additional more and more practice. And so she's seen the difference in that, and so she's differentiated things as a result of that. I learned that one as a parent. What do I need to do to get an A versus what is the purpose of this assignment? Your gifted students are going to question why you're giving them this work. Is it busy work? Do I really need to do this? Am I going to learn anything out of it? Where a high achiever is really after the A. Gifted student doesn't always care about the grade. is focused on the destination or the end product versus being focused on the journey or the process. So there is a difference in there. Some gifted students are also high achievers, and some high achievers are also gifted, but that they're not, they are mutually exclusive pieces. The other thing to be aware of with our gifted population is we do have about a dozen students who are what are considered twice exceptional. And twice exceptional is this idea that you are gifted, but you also may also have a disability. We have students who are gifted and are autistic. Students who are gifted and have Asperger's. Several students who are gifted and have ADHD. And so that's this idea that they have competing interests and competing needs. And Christina is really good with working with our teachers about how to best meet the needs of those kids who fall under this idea of being twice exceptional. So gifts versus talents. Gifts are superior innate aptitudes, and talents are outstanding learned capabilities. You may have the potential to do well, but it's what you do and how you work towards it. So if gifted students do not or cannot put the time and effort into the development of their talents, those talents will not emerge. Just like, as I was saying, when we were not focused on serving that population, some of them had a great deal of unrealized potential. So regardless of how gifted a student is, if the student doesn't spend time training and learning and practicing and being challenged at higher levels, you can't expect specific talents to emerge. So kind of, we have some sleeping giants out there, basically. and that results in underachievers, that there are gifted students who are underachieving. They hold the promise for talent development, but their gifts don't always result in talents. So one thing sometimes I will have conversations with parents whose children have not been identified gifted, but they want them to be in a gifted cluster or in a gifted class. And I have to explain that being gifted doesn't mean somebody gave you a gift. It's actually, for some of these kids, it's a burden they're bearing. We have to be cautious that we don't all want the same things, because for many of these kids, they think deeper about things, they have more anxiety about things, and so it's not always this idea that it's a package, that they get to unwrap at Christmas. It's something they're living with every day, and it causes a great amount of stress for them as well. So. Information about our gifted program, and I hope that kind of helped to get you informed.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mrs. Grigsby. Thank you. I think that's very helpful to help us articulate what Madison Plains has to offer. That's what I was hoping to get from that. I really appreciate it.
And I really have to say, though, in 2015, there was nothing. We had no offering whatsoever. It was really we struggled with that as a board, and so really great work.
Next, we'll move to board committee reports. Finance committee report.
You want to do it?
Why don't you take it?
Thanks, I appreciate it. Bob kept us in line and we stuck to an hour, so hopefully he's going to keep us in line and we're going to stick to an hour here tonight. But we had a great conversation that Todd brought a lot of information together for the committee to review as far as our fiscal year 2019 spending plan. To see the fluctuation and where we're at, and it allows us to get a better understanding of what we've got to work with and how we need to get creative, so to speak, as far as our spending and our daily operations. And so I think Todd and Chad have a lot of great ideas on how they can implement some of those things we talked about to curb that spending. Where we're possibly going to have a little dip in December, January. But also as far as where our fund balances are of any possible shortfalls that we're going to have and what can we do to possibly resolve that. One of our main goals as a finance committee is to put really some triggers in place of what do we need to act, and looking at the data that Todd has given us,
How do we take that and to correct that situation? And do we need as a district a cash reserve, or do we want to look at a short-term lending program, which Bob was doing backflips over? Just to really see as a whole, what is it going to take to get us, you know, through this next couple of months as we expect our income tax revenues to start hitting us? Which, when are we expected to get
It goes into effect January 2019, so we won't be collecting until after that. So that's why we have such a small expectation in this fiscal year. That's only 6 months worth of collections. And most of that would be people making estimated payments, quarterly payments.
Did you say originally it's like $90,000 is all we're going to collect?
Yeah, I think I had put in the forecast $100,000.
Okay.
Hopeful.
So really that first year is
very minimal.
Out of 1.9 million, I mean, that's a very small amount.
One of the big points towards the end of our meeting that we talked about, and it might be a good conversation at some point in time as a board for a whole, is what do we feel as a board or district should have in cash reserves? What position should we be at? Is there a number that we should be budgeting going forward of having that number there as a 30-day operation, a 60-day, or 6 months, or, you know, what is it? It's not going to happen overnight, something we talked about. Or it's not going to instantly have $500,000 sitting there when we're in the situation that we're in. So it's something that we can start to develop, and it should be a goal to work towards. And so hopefully at our next meeting, we can dive deeper into that, and also for our appropriations that should be coming to you guys relatively soon. Anything else to add?
No, I would just say that, you know, that we do have our website up and running for the Financial Advisory Committee, and that's where we post all our documents. The one that Mr. Tribler was referencing was our cash reserve survey results. A fellow treasurer in the state solicited the other treasurers in the state, other districts, for information on what their cash reserve policies are. And it ran the gamut from, we don't have a cash reserve policy because we don't have the cash, we don't have that luxury, to, you know, we have a policy in place that says if we get too much, this is where it goes. We start to put it into the PI fund or athletics or some other place. So, and anywhere in between, you know, so from a 30-day policy to 60 to 90. So it really is a lot of good information to start allowing us to have that conversation of where we need to be for Madison Plains. And so, like, when you see our financial report and spending plan, I don't know if you've noticed, but at the bottom, I always put the number of days of operating days that we have for this month. So, you know, you'll see that fluctuate from a high of 70 days down to a low of 6. You know, it gets really low there, and we'll see that here soon. So, but yeah, a lot of good discussion and a lot of work to do. So.
One of the things, I know Bob is unable to attend our next meeting, which is September 10th. So I don't know if it's okay, but if either the three of you would like to sit in, you're more than welcome. It's at 4:30 in Mr. Eisner's office. It's a Monday. We have a set meeting every month, so just throwing that out there if anyone's interested.
I think I should be able to attend, but if either of you want to, just let me know. All right, so now to the treasurer's report.
Thank you, Mr. President. For the treasurer's report here, I wanted to point out our spending plan, which is somewhat of a draft, because it still includes our last forecast, which was the updated May forecast from May of 2018. So that'll be updated, of course, with the new forecast here in October. But a couple things that I wanted to point out. If you remember, at the last meeting, we had an expectation at the end of the year for a certain amount of property tax to come in at the end of the fiscal year 2018, and we fell short. And I wasn't that worried about it because we hadn't received, it was a timing issue. I kind of put it out there as that, it was a timing issue. And where I knew that was the issue, it made me feel good when I actually saw it happen. You know, so it always makes you feel good when things come true the way you think that they will. So here you see in July, we actually received $819,000 in real estate tax. Typically, we only receive about $300,000 in July. So that's that missing amount, or that late amount that came in late. It came in, instead of in June and July, it all came in July. So I wanted to point that out, that came to pass. The other thing that I would like to point out is what we were talking about earlier, which is our spending plan and the low points that we will experience. A lot of this has been discussed before. It's just kind of exacerbated this year. We're a year closer. You see that graph drops every year because of the deficit spending that we've been going through. And as of right now, like I said, this can change because it's based off of forecast May of 2018 for fiscal year 19. So we'll have that updated. But as of right now, it looks like in December and January, we drop below the line, so to speak, below zero. Now that may not happen. We're not going to allow that to happen. But a couple things I want to point out about that is, right now, for instance, we have $2.6 million as of the end of July, right here. So $2.6 million, those are general fund monies. But our actual cash, what we have in the bank, is $3,052,000. Now, those aren't general fund monies, of course. That's all of our funds. That's food service. Those are our grants. That's athletics. That's student activities. But I just point that out, that's how close it'll be. That difference between 2.6 million and 3 million, you know, that kind of makes up for our $300,000 shortfall potentially, at least from a cash position. So whereas not at the fund level, we could drop below zero at that point in time. As of right now, it looks like we still have the cash, but it's so tight to make you very nervous. And if you remember last year, we sought early tax advances from the county auditor. I've already spoken to the county auditor about that this year, and she's willing to do that again this year. So we will be pursuing those as soon as possible. And then our other option, again, which Corey alluded to, that Bob was thrilled about, was a short-term borrowing at no cost to the district. But our banking institution last year, and I would have to confirm again with them this year, was willing to extend to us a line of credit, a short-term line of credit at no cost, at no interest, as a courtesy of being a customer of theirs. So that is another option. But next year, we shouldn't be having this discussion. Next year, we should be close to having a full collection on our income tax. We will have collected, 12 months worth. It takes 18 months to a full collection, but we will be in a better position. We should be in a better position this time next year, thanks to the voters for, approving that income tax. But this year, it's still going to be tight.
Todd, I appreciate you pointing that out. I think you've referenced this, but I think it's key to point out, we forecasted all this. This isn't something that's taken us by surprise. It's a matter of the income tax levy. It just takes a while to be implemented and have full collection.
Correct, and that's why it's a credit to the board for the budget reduction plan that had to be in place. This is the very reason that had to be in place for this year. This year, things are still so tight for the district to be able to get through until we start receiving those collections.
Just for the record, I know it's been alluded to twice as a joke about Mr. Butts being very excited about the possibility of doing some short-term lending. Both of those comments were, of course, sarcasm.
We did know that, by the way.
I just want to go on record and say that for the meeting minutes. Mr. Butts has made it clear that he is not a fan of that, and we certainly understand. So.
I appreciate that. It didn't take Chad long to learn Mr. Butts' opinion on borrowing of any kind. It's something I learned real quick, too, when I started. This board in particular is very averse to borrowing of any kind, and I can appreciate that. With that, that does conclude my report. Unless there are any questions.
I make a motion upon recommendation of the Treasurer of the Board for financial item H3.
Second. Discussion? Roll call, please.
Mrs. Foley?
Yes.
Mr. Coburn?
Yes.
Mr. Butts?
Yes.
Mrs. Zinnikas?
Yes.
Mrs. Foley? Oh, I'm sorry, Mr. Mason?
Abstain.
Thank you. All right. Motion carries 4-0.
Okay. All right, minutes, and then we'll move to the superintendent's report.
So just a couple of discussion items, if I can, before we get started on the things that are listed on the agenda. Just a quick update with regard to enrollment. We are currently, compared to where we were last year, we are down 20 students. We were last year we were at 1256. We are currently at 1236, so we are down 20. In terms of open enrollment, last year we were negative 61 in terms of how many we lost to how many we gained. At the moment, we are minus 63. So that's where that stands. And with regard to kindergarten enrollment, last year we were 82. We are currently at 98.
Good.
So wanted to make the board aware of that. I also want to just give a quick update with regard to the wastewater treatment plant. That work is in process. The UV system is in place. There is a, and it is currently hooked up to some temporary electricity. There is a concrete base that needs to go around the UV system. That is on order, and it will take about 2 weeks for that to come in. And so once that comes in, our contractor, J.R. Mason, has indicated that that will, of course, be completed, and then the permanent electricity will be installed as well. But in terms of the actual UV system itself, it is up and running, and I am told that we are EPA compliant. So just wanted to be aware of that. So that is that part of my discussion for the evening. The next part we get into with regard to what is on the agenda goes back to pay to participate fees and the budget reduction plan. And if I could, I just would like to send around a copy of the plan that we have. Send those that way. There are a few extra copies for anybody that would like one. As we have begun implementation of the pay to participate initiative, pay to participate fees, there have been some questions that have come up with regard to a couple of areas in particular, the first of which is band and the second of which is quick recall. Everyone understands that there is a pay to participate fee for marching band that is not in question. What is in question a little bit is how we want to move forward in terms of pep band and concert band. On the budget reduction plan that was approved, it says athletics and then marching / pep / concert band. That, of course, is open to interpretation, whether or not that was intended to be one entity, three separate entities, or some combination thereof. I think it is important as the board considers how they would like to move forward and consider some of these things a little bit. A couple things that is important to keep in mind. Pep band and concert band are in the same season. Concert band essentially begins on November 1st or whenever football season would be over. If a team were to make the playoffs, then of course marching band continues. But once football season is over, concert band season begins, and the pep band is something that occurs during that time. And pep band really, for all intents and purposes, is really more of a community service to provide a good environment at our basketball games through the winter season. The way that works is approximately half of the students who are in concert band, they take a night, and then the other half takes another night, and so on and so forth. They divide up the home basketball games, so that there is approximately 50% of the concert band here at the home games on any given evening when there is a home basketball contest. And so it really is kind of more of a community service practice for the band to be able to do that. A couple of other things I would like you to keep in mind too is that concert band is required for band class. It is my understanding that a student can be in band class, but they do not have to be in marching band. A student who is in band class is required to be in concert band. So that is part of the requirement. It is a class, and they do they do get a grade for it. The other piece to keep in mind as well is that with concert band, they only travel two, maybe three times, depending upon what happens with state competition. But those things are, of course, required. So that really is that part of the question with regard to that. There are some people who have commented to me that they are concerned about what will happen to the concert band numbers if we charge pay to participate for both marching band and concert band. So there's a little bit of a concern, I guess, that there might be a feeling of perhaps double jeopardy, so to speak, if with that. The other question goes back to quick recall. From reading the documents and understanding the conversation, it has been made clear to me that the board did not intend to charge clubs, which brings quick recall into question a little bit. They are a club per se, but they are also a club that competes. They are recognized by the Ohio Heritage Conference, and they do travel. So just looking for some clarification on how the board would like to proceed with that as well.
Can I ask you a question? Do you get a grade with marching band? Isn't that if you miss two of the things, you could fail that class, right? Isn't that, you get a grade for that one too?
I'm sure that it is part of the band
requirement.
Class, yes. But I don't believe, I believe for those students, and correct me if I'm wrong, those students who are not in marching band, I believe they have some alternative assignments, but it's not required that they be in
Karen,
marching band.
Karen, I want to say sorry.
Karen, can you just address that real quick?
Please.
There you go.
Band is one credit for the year. Marching band earns an additional half credit. And so students can opt in to that additional half credit.
We did have this discussion on marching band, and I'm not sure they get a letter grade. It's more of a pass-fail than a letter grade, which is the discussion when they became co-curricular. And that's the point. It's co-curricular. So marching band, and this is my feeling, marching band certainly should have pay-to-participate fee, but the concert band is curricular. They are graded and it's required. There's no way we could basically charge a participate fee
for concert
band. I just don't see that. Speaking to the quick recall team, a year ago I questioned. They are athletics. They are part of the conference. I don't see how we could not have them pay to participate. I just don't see how we could not do that.
I think some of it is being true to the budget reduction plan, which we put out there and had, I believe, 9 public meetings where we discussed it, and it was on there. I think these are fair questions that some of the blame's on us. We should have addressed it at the time. I wish some of the stakeholders would have addressed potential what we were looking at the time. I think there's some blame to go around. Part of it was we were looking at trying to save money from the general fund and what entities use more general fund money. We got that presentation last year, approximately 10% more per band student compared to athletic students. So there is a cost to the band. The last month we talked about the cost spent for instruments straight from the PI fund or general fund. So that, I think that's part of the equation. It's not just do they use busing and that kind of thing. There's a lot of general fund or PI fund money that goes to that particular entity. But as far as, I think the tricky thing is we had it on here. I think it's fair to clarify it, especially because there's the overlap between the PEP and the concert band. Kind of the example that made some sense to me is it's like charging somebody that's on the JV football team but also dresses on the varsity football team for two sports. I don't think that's what we intended, and I don't want to do that. So I think charging them for both is definitely something that wouldn't be appropriate. But as far as the same idea with quick recall, as far as being fair to the process, quick recall was discussed during the process, and we specifically said we do that as a club. We're not going to include them. So I think it's a little unfair to now include them. I do think we specifically said we'll address how this plays out how the numbers are affected. And that's a fair point to talk about the numbers, but that point applies to every sport too, right? You know, I mean, and the same rules apply as far as, you know, if you're free or reduced price lunch in the band, you don't have to pay it, just like you don't have to pay it if you're an athlete. So, I mean, that concern as far as how it affects participation in anything is a concern across the board. It's not unique to any one entity. So I think quick recall is something that if we go forward next year, I think that's a fair discussion. But I think because we specifically did not include it this time, it's not necessarily fair.
I'm sorry. I disagree that quick recall is a club. When they letter in a sport, it's not a club.
Now it's part of our conversation.
I'm sorry?
It didn't get a lot of discussion, but it did come up. How do we want to?
Because then we did the number of students. So really what we're trying, do we have to go back and look at the number of students that we have in these programs?
That's one thing that I would point out is that when we came to the $25,000 figure, the numbers that we used were based off submitted rosters from band and athletics. And we received a set of numbers for marching band, and we received a set of numbers for a roster for, it was labeled PEP, but in hindsight, PEP is concert, and concert is PEP. So, but two sets of numbers for the band that were used to develop that $25,000 figure. So, the board is is able to revise the plan, absolutely, but if you do remove a set of those numbers, it will reduce the amount that will come in.
Well, the numbers we got, PEP, and so they weren't separate. PEP and concert were the same.
Yes, it was submitted under one.
We get three sets. We get two sets.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah.
But were you saying that they are intertwined? I mean, if it affects one kid, it's going to affect all of them. PEP and concert. If we just say to charge one, if you're part of PEP, you're automatically also going to be part of concert.
Sure.
As far as our clarification goes, we're saying just PEP is being charged, but that'll affect everybody that's in.
Yeah, it would. I would say it's more fair if you were going to do that
concert.
To say concert, and
yes.
PEP is a offshoot of concert,
yes.
Not the other way around.
Yeah.
But the rosters, the clarification I was making is that in developing that figure, based on their free and reduced percentages, based on the rosters submitted, the roster figure submitted included a separate amount for that second season of band, let's say.
We just could not charge a fee to participate for something that is required and part of the curriculum. You just can't do that.
We did have that discussion too. You're right. But I think we need to see the numbers. I don't remember them. Right?
Yeah,
I think we need them. So are you asking us to look at this whole thing again?
We're just asking for clarification.
This isn't a...
I'll do whatever you want.
This is not a voting issue. We're just trying to provide...
Because
a lot of the parents have raised fair questions that we need to address.
I think clarification is needed because based on the document that we presented and approved, it is up for interpretation the way that marching band and PEP is presented with the backslashes there. Is that one item? Is that three items? How is that to be interpreted? And I think that's why we have to have the discussion, because knowing how we went through the process to determine the dollar amount in that plan is going to help to answer that question. One thing that probably more thought should have been put into is this being a document used in the future that we were going to be referring to, and making sure things like three slashes is a little more clear.
But the one thing that I want to point out, though, is in all of the discussions that we've had, we've never said that the pay to participate is going to be a long-term policy that we want to put in place.
Right.
This was a decision that we made to fill essentially a $25,000 gap in the budget, this year. And I think that we made it perfectly, at least I was under the understanding, that we were going to reevaluate this, for next school year, because we might say that we don't want to do it, or it needs to be higher. But I kind of agree with Mark, though, that as far as the PEP and concert, I can't see charging them, both. I can see doing a combination. If we're going to combine them, then they should pay, one fee. We came up with these numbers as far as the general fund dollars that were being spent. And you look at Mark alluded to the expenses that we've had out of the general fund and PI. Last school year, I think it was like $35,000 out of the general fund and PI for instruments and uniforms, plus the supplementals. So all of that starts to add up, and I don't think that, we've had 9 meetings now, this is the 10th meeting that we're discussing this. Now's not the time to go backwards. You know, so I think we have to live by the document and what we put in place. And if it's not going to work, then I think we make the change for next year. I don't think we need to go backwards and rehash this out.
I would disagree with Corey. And to start with, when we talked about the dollar amount spent on the ban last year, we're looking at last year. Go back in time to previous years and see what has been spent on the ban. It's minimal.
But we're talking about, what do we need to clarify here?
I agree we are.
Yeah.
But when we look at this and we're talking about concert band, and that's part of the curriculum, and we're talking about pay to participate for something that is part of the curriculum, that is not right.
I tend to agree with Bob. If it's part of the curriculum, we cannot charge.
I agree.
But then, going back to quick recall, though, if it's not considered a club and it's not part of the curriculum and you earn a letter, you should be paying.
That is my point, Cora. So thank you.
Mm-hmm. What do you think about PEP?
With marching and PEP, I think it should be marching is one, PEP and concert is another. Those are two different seasons. So they should be paying two separate fees.
I'm comfortable with
that. I'm okay with that, but I don't think that we can now go back and add quick recall. You know, if we did not recognize it and inform people ahead of time, how can we now go 2 months after the fact, after we, this is what we advertised, and this is what we sold to the taxpayers, and now say, oh, now we're going to add quick recall. It's not fair.
It was brief, but it was discussed, and it was said it would not be included.
Because it was considered at the time as a club.
And
is this still a club?
How many students were there that we talked about? And quick recall.
And it was not factored in.
It was negligible.
It wasn't factored in the money, was it?
I don't know that we specifically talked about quick recall. We talked about clubs.
Clubs.
Quick recall is not a club. It's a lettered sport.
Let me ask that. Was it included in the dollar value that we calculated?
That one I need to check.
I think if it was, then it's fair to put it in there. I think if it's not, then we didn't factor it into the amount, and we're basically just adding to it.
Mm-hmm.
You guys comfortable with that?
Yeah.
Yes.
Well, except Corey. If it wasn't part of the numbers.
If it wasn't a part of our numbers,
then
we
should not be including it.
I think that's the consensus.
Yeah.
Right?
Correct me if I'm wrong. The consensus would be marching and PEP if they're two separate seasons, the same rules apply, $100 per student, $200 family cap per season, all those same rules apply. If somehow you can just be in concert, that you don't have to pay to just be in concert. And it's definitely not you're paying for both in the same season.
Again, we may see participation in PEP drop off.
Like I said, that's a concern for every sport, for everything.
Yeah.
And that's, I think that's why what Corey says about us addressing this at the end of the year, we're going to want the band and the athletic director to get us information on participation rates and determine if that it affected us and how we want to move forward.
I agree. Just to be on the record, I am in agreement with the PEP and marching being two different entities, concert band being free.
And I think quick recall, the consensus is dependent on if that number was factored into the number of what you calculated, Tom,
to
determine.
I can get that for you. I can send out an email tomorrow.
Yeah, just clarify for us. I think you have your marching orders, depending on what that is, we'll dictate that.
Is quick recall a specific season, or is it year-round?
It kind of goes through late fall through the winter.
Okay.
So.
It's like a winter sport.
And we recognize it as an athletic?
Kids are letters.
It's recognized by the OHC as a competitive event.
Oh.
Yeah, you're right. We get a letter, and it's recognized.
I think that's fair. Okay. You guys good?
Okay. Thank you. The next item on the agenda deals with some disposal of property valued at less than the dollar value set forth in state law. There are a couple of items on here that we need to strike the old technology items and the old camera and photography equipment. We will work to put that on next month, which leaves the old F-350 truck and the what we refer to as the old box truck, or what I refer to as the old box truck. And there is a recognition on our part that there is an attempt being made here to properly follow policy and enhance the way we have done that. So just want to go on record and acknowledge that as well. The Rural Collaboration Project is the next piece that I would like to talk about and make the board aware of. We have decided to join with this group. It is a group of 8 different school districts, including us. The other districts are Elgin, Fairbanks, Mechanicsburg, Pleasant, Triad, North Union, and Ridgedale. This is an initiative that I believe was spearheaded by North Union. It is an opportunity for small rural districts to come together and allow teachers that may not have the opportunity to collaborate with same subject teachers to be able to do so. There is a charge for us to do this. It is $1,500, but we will be able to send 28 or 29 teachers, at least that's our plan, to be a part of these discussions. Certainly, when you look at opportunity costs there, well worth the dollar investment that is being made. The agenda items that will be covered at these meetings are updates from ODE, timelines for 2018, standards implementation, diving deeper into content conversations, resources, Ohio State assessment data, and growth mindset-oriented activities. On September 5th, the high school ELA staffs will be getting together. On September 6th, the high school math departments will be getting together. On September 17th, grades 6 through 8 math will get together. On September 25th, grades 6 through 8 ELA will get together. And then on October 2nd, it will be grades 3 through 5 math. And then on October 4th, grades 3 through 5 ELA. And so with our vision to make Madison Plains a model of rural education, this seemed to be a natural fit in terms of having those conversations and allowing our staff the opportunity to learn and grow. So that is part of something that we are doing as well. As you also know, we did in fact purchase a Chevy pickup truck for the maintenance department. This goes back to the fact that the F-350 that are up above and the old box truck, the F-350 is just not in working order. It has, from what we understand, what I understand, and I'm not a mechanic or a car guy, but it has a hole in the oil pan. And to fix that, we would have had to remove the entire engine. The radiator is leaking, the brakes are shot, and there is a 3 to 4 foot hole in the bed. So it really has seen better days. The box truck, so to speak, it was to the point in time where the guys in the maintenance department did not feel like it was safe to drive. The title on it had been deemed a lemon. They did not feel safe driving it, and so they had been using their own trucks. I did not feel like that was a wise thing to do from a liability standpoint, and so based upon the information that I had at the time, made the decision to go ahead and make this purchase. You know about it in advance, but you knew about it before this evening, but I'm trying to follow policy and make you aware at the next board meeting that that was done. So that is why that item is there as well. The next item on the agenda is the First Student Services Agreement. This is an agreement that you will be asked to approve a little later in the meeting. There is a need on our part to be able to hire from time to time some bus drivers to be able to drive our routes. We do not have a very deep subpool at all in the transportation department. And so as we have in years past, we are once again utilizing First Student to provide some per diem driving time. So that part is there for you to see as well. The next piece that I would like to talk about are some board goals. At our last meeting, we had had some conversation, and this feels like it was a very long time ago, but we had some conversation about goals for the year for the district. If I can boot my computer, or log in, rather.
While Chad's getting that up, I just wanted to make sure I let everybody know also for the F-350 that we will be disposing of, that will be on GovDeals. That's our auction site. It's no cost to the district. Once we get it up, it's currently featured with a link on the treasurer's page. We'll make sure we bring that link forward onto the homepage because we absolutely want to give every local resident the opportunity to bid on something like that as well. So we'll feature that prominently there, just so everybody knows.
So this, I took what we created last month and I've worked to clean it up a little bit. The information that you see in black is information from the strategic plan that we had, that we currently have in place. And so the items in blue are things that are new and that have been added over the course of the last month. There in the first area we have our academic goals. Those are from our district improvement plan. So if you have questions about those specifically, I can show you the district improvement plan, but that's where that information is. And then goal area number two was with regard to relationships. And so that is the goal there in black at the top is the goal that we have. The strategies that you see in black below, that is content that had previously been there. The information that you see in blue, once again, is information that we have added either last month or I have added in thinking about how we can walk some of this out. So you'll see there with the relationship piece, one of the things that I have in there is that the superintendent will conduct a listening and learning tour of the district, and that is something that I intend to get started on here in the very near future. I want to be able to go around to the different communities and into the buildings and listen to our various stakeholders and find out what they think is working and find out what they think our opportunities for growth are. Down below then, we had talked about at the last meeting about building relationships with the various communities as well within the district. I would like to try to get to at least one governmental entity meeting in all of our townships if I can, so that would be a goal, so that's what that is reflective of. Please know that is not an attempt on my part to get to each township each month. I would like to get to one or two of their meetings throughout the course of the year so that I hit at least each township at least once, but I would like to be able to go out and meet with the elected officials and be a part of those conversations. So that it was one of the strategies that I have included for the relationship goal. In terms of down below, strategy three, consistent advertising for Madison Plains throughout the district. We had talked, these are some of the things that we had talked about, but reestablishing the communication committee. We do have a date set, that is September 4th, this coming Tuesday at 5 o'clock p.m. In my office. Invitations have been sent out for that. So that piece is going to get up and running. I also wrote in there, and we kind of talked about this a little bit at the last meeting too, but developing a comprehensive communication plan. That is something that I would like to charge the communication committee with. Obviously, I will be a big part of that. And you'll note there in the middle column that I have indicated that all staff are responsible for communication. And so that is something that I would like us to be able to focus on as a district, is having all of us be mindful of the fact that the good things that are happening need to be communicated. Down the left-hand column then, the items that are justified there to the right, those are, I just tried to make a list, and we some of those were mentioned last month at the meeting when we talked. Those are just ways that we have to communicate. And so those are things that can be part of the comprehensive communication plan in terms of how we work to send the message out. But that's why those are there. Moving on down below. Oops. With regard to goal area three, retention of staff, again, you see in the black print the items that we've had in the past. Based upon our conversation last month and a few ideas that I've had, I've added the strategies in blue down below. Continue with the exit interviews to gather data about who or about why employees leave. Strategy six, continue with recognition of employees and then try to enhance recognition efforts. Strategy seven, increase and enhance professional development, collaborate on PD with staff. And so that's one of the things that we've talked about. And Karen and I had a conversation the other day. We have a PD day coming up on September 21st. And I said, you know what, let's talk to the teachers and see what they have to say. And so our LPDC meeting has been moved for this month to move it up so that we can have that conversation with them. And the idea is to be collaborative and you know, work together. Strategy eight is create a page on the website that outlines the fringe benefits available to the MP staff. That is something that we had talked about last month. And then strategy nine is a marketing brochure used at job fairs. I think that's a good idea. So that is something that we can work to implement too. Down below with the finance piece, here again, the items in blue are the items that are new. And Mr. Coburn referenced, as he talked about the finance committee, just an idea there to establish thresholds for when to seek new funds, and then a draft to just establish a goal of what our minimum cash on hand should be. So some thoughts there. And then finally, in goal area five, I talked last month about having an area where we talked about positive stakeholder experience. And so there are a couple of sub-areas here that I've highlighted in yellow. The first of which is just to update and resubmit district safety plans. I think it's important for people to feel safe, and so we want to make sure that we get that part of it done. That is required by in January, and it's one of the things that as I come in as a new superintendent, one of the things that I wanted us to do anyway, so it works out perfectly that we have to do that. And then just conduct and train students and staff for various types of emergency situations. And so that is something else that we can do as well to help make the experience here positive and help people feel safe. With regard to enrollment, I have a note here, and this is something that we talked about, but reversing the trend, decrease the outflow and increase the inflow to Madison Plains so that we have a positive net gain from open enrollment. So this is an area that I spent a little bit of time thinking about. So we have surveyed parents and students who have left the district and try to find out why they have left. I'd like us to audit our program offerings and do a needs assessment this year as well. I think that'd be something that would be worthwhile to do. Ultimately, if we're not meeting students' needs, as Mrs. Grigsby mentioned earlier, that would be a reason why people would leave. And so if we can do that, I think that would be something that would be beneficial for us. And then study the relationship survey that we talk about up in the first, or maybe it's the second goal. Study that survey to determine if it is meeting the needs for data gathering for our overall satisfaction and effectiveness of the school district. So I think that's something that we can do too. And so I would submit this to you. I will share this with you so that you can look at it. And I think it's something that we can then revisit next month as we continue. But it's something that I wanted to share with you. I told you that I would work to polish this up at the last meeting, and so I have done that. We can certainly work to refine that over the course of the next month and shape the way or where we are going. So, all right.
Sounds good.
Sure. So if you want to go back and... the other thing that is there under superintendent's report is we do have a desire to change an employee, their status. So to do that, we need to adopt a technology coordinator salary schedule. So that information is there for you to be able to act on this evening. And so the action portion of it is down in policy and governance. That is something that is there. That particular salary schedule aligns with our maintenance salary schedule. And so that is there for your approval a little bit later in the agenda. But in terms of the superintendent's report, just discussion items and things, I believe that concludes it.
Thank you. All right, so there's nothing under Section J, so we'll go to Section K, business.
Excuse me, yes, I said policy and governance on that business. Approval of business items. There are some items there for your review. Mr. Mustine, is it possible to, there we go. Student handbook changes are on the docket for this evening. Those changes were highlighted in yellow for you in the attachment that you had in the agenda. There is a new calendar that is there. Staff updates are for our updated staffing that we've done over the summer. Those are reflected there, and then the student fees and pay to participate language has been included as well. And there was just a little bit of a correction in the dance language that was there. The dances were referred to as co-curricular. I believe they're more accurately reflected as extracurricular. Perhaps even, I would argue, a social gathering. But at any rate, it is what it is. So just a quick change in language there from co to extracurricular for that. The second item that is down on the docket for this area, or for this portion of the meeting, is to approve our first student services agreement. That was what I had referenced earlier. The next item is the technology coordinator salary schedule. And then the last item is the approval of disposal property that we spoke about. And just a reminder that the old technology and the old cameras and photography equipment will be taken care of, I hope, next month.
So when you make the motion, if you would mind exempting those items, with the exception of...
Exactly, are we waiting on for those two items?
The list. They're not quite developed the way I'd like to be able to get a little bit of a better description of them. And then the photography, I don't have a list at all.
Okay.
So, and maybe the list that we have, maybe that is adequate for you. I don't have that for you this evening, but I was hoping to get a little bit of a better description. Cody and I have talked about that, so we will get that to you next month, but I will take the fault on that, and we'll work to get
I mean,
that
do
done.
We ultimately, in order to vote on this, do we need to have that detailed list?
Right now, you have a kind of a broad description,
yeah,
not necessarily a list of items. So you just have a group.
I guess at the very least, what I would like to do is be able to provide you with the item numbers so that we have an official record that those things have been taken out of inventory.
Okay.
That would be my hope.
Yeah.
So.
Any more discussion?
Mr. President, I make a motion that we approve items K 1 through 5 with the removal of old technology items and old cameras and photography equipment from number 2. Number 3, which number is it?
5.
5, sorry. 5.
Second.
Discussion.
Sorry.
Roll call, please.
Mrs. Lee.
Yes.
Mrs. Anitas.
Yes.
Mr. Coburn.
Yes.
Mr. Butts.
Yes.
Mr. Mason.
Abstain.
Motion carries 4-0.
Now we'll move to Section L, personnel.
Mr. President, I make a motion that upon recommendation of the superintendent, the board, you want to talk about something?
Yeah, probably do.
Oh,
yes.
You do?
Yes, we do. Forgive me. I'm finishing up my
that's
documentation
okay.
here.
It's a consent. I was going.
That's good. I appreciate it. There are a couple of items here that are going to need to be struck as well. Because of a phone call that I received this afternoon, we need, under the resignation section, Amanda Cordell, her resignation as from the position of aide. Needs to be struck, so she is not resigning from that position. And if your copy is like mine, that
it's
is
the
not there. It's
page.
Up. It's up
top
on the screen.
The it's at the top
okay.
of the next page.
Is it?
Page.
Yeah, it's right at the top.
Got it. There we go. So that part is being struck, and then we're in the employment of personnel section down below, where it says employment is assistant district head cook. We are going to strike that portion as well.
An explanation, Chad?
Mrs. Cordell feels that she would be happier, I think, in the study hall aide position. I think at this point, maybe that's all I'd like to say.
Okay, and that's acceptable. It's a personnel issue. I was just curious.
Now, can I go?
Yes, please.
Mr. President, I make the motion that upon recommendation of the superintendent, the board approve personnel items L2 through L9 with the change of Amanda Cordell being struck from the resignation and Amanda Cordell being struck from the new employment of personnel.
Second. Discussion? Roll call, please.
Mrs. Foley?
Yes.
Mr. Butts?
Yes.
Mr. Coburn?
Yes.
Mrs. Zinnikas?
Yes.
Mr. Mason?
Abstain.
Motion carries 4-0. All
right. I believe the next section is the, or did we include the donations?
No, we lost the heading on the donations, but it is the next item.
Okay. Next section would be.
Mr. President, I make the recommendation that upon recommendation of the superintendent, the board approve personnel items or donations as presented. Listed below.
Where are you?
Second. It doesn't
okay.
have a header.
So.
Uh-huh. All right, discussion?
I'd like to note that we've assigned values to some of those items. For instance, the ice cream, that's just an estimated value. We actually received the product, of course. We didn't receive any funds. The same thing with Mr. Morlock and the Morlock family, donating the items for the breakfast and brunch. He actually bought those items himself and turned in the receipts, and we'd just like the recognition from the board as accepting that donation.
Thank you.
And I would just like to echo some of the comments that were made earlier by Mr. Coburn and some of the others. I thought the Ice Cream Social was a wonderful idea, and I appreciate Mr. Coburn coming up with that, and the implementation I thought was very good. I agree if we can get it to the high school next year, I think that would be great. But it was a very nice event, and I think well received, so it was wonderful. And I want to go on record as thanking Velvet as well. That was fantastic. And all the other people.
And Corey, you donated a lot of stuff too for the spoons and napkins and things, so thank you for that.
I don't know if we have it or not, but I mentioned this to Mark, but if not, I'd like to get it. For instances like this or the Velvet, obviously they're not going to travel from Utica out to here
right.
for us to say thank you. If we could get some type of thank you card with our logo on it, you know, from the board, that
yeah.
on cases like this, you know, I think that. And even if it's $100, the Morlock family, I think that it goes a long way to be able to personally sign and thank them
yeah.
you know, for that. So
we have some cards,
have cards.
That we can give mm-hmm. the board. Or,
yeah. I think that's important to the board. I agree with you. The Morlock, anybody that gives money to the school is incredibly appreciated. And if we can at least give them a thank you card, and if we can tout their business or whatever, you know, I think the board's in agreement that we're all for that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Motion to end. That was discussion. All right, roll call, please.
Mrs. Foley?
Yes.
Mr. Coburn?
Yes.
Mrs. Zinnikas?
Yes.
Mr. Butts?
Yes.
Mr. Mason?
Abstain.
Motion carries 4-0.
We have no new items, so now we'll move to section O, executive session. I move that we enter to executive session at 8:37 p.m. to for the purpose of section 1, to consider the appointment, employment, dismissal, discipline, promotion, demotion, or compensation of a public employee or official, or the investigation of charges or complaints against a public employee, official, licensee, or regulated official. Section 3, conferences with an attorney. The items.
Mr. Mason, you're making an action item. And
I'm not going to vote, or I'm going to abstain.
Are you okay with?
Yeah, you can. Yeah, sorry.
I didn't want to get you in the spot.
I make a motion that we enter into executive session at 8:33 p.m. for the purpose of one or more of the following under my revised code 121.22G, section 1, to consider the appointment, employment, dismissal, discipline, promotion, demotion, or compensation of a public employee or official, or the investigation of changes or complaints against a public employee, official, licensee, or regulated individual, and Section 3, conferences with an attorney.
Second. Well, Section 5 also.
And Section 5 will be added, matters required to be kept confidential by federal law or rules or state statutes.
Discussion? Roll call, please.
Mrs. Foy?
Yes.
Mr. Coburn?
Yes.
Mr. Butts?
Yes.
Mrs. Zinnikas?
Yes.
Mr. Mason?
Abstain.
Motion carries 4-0.
The next regular meeting will be September 18th at 7 p.m. here in the district meeting room. As you heard, there's some different dates for the committee meetings if you'd like to attend those as well. There will be no action taken after the executive session.